This is Near FM
90.3.
Farmer academic Alan Tuffery. Alan, good afternoon, and it's nice to talk to you on a lovely sunny day.
It's always sunny in Raheny, Donny. It's lovely to talk to you.
Yes, Fergus Carroll does tell me that from time to time that the sun always shines in Raheny.
Yeah, yeah. Something it's behind the clouds, but it's still shining.
Something that is a bugbearer of mine, and we are going to chat about it today. And I was delighted when you sent me through the stuff during the week for our chat, is the standard of basic handwriting and how it has disimproved over the years, Alan.
Oh, you mean the actual script of the way what appears on the page?
I mean the whole ball of wax. I mean appears on the page, the way people use language, and the way that new words seem to have come into the lexicon from text speak, which now seem to pass for ordinary common or garden English.
Yeah, right. Well, do you know, us old fellas, if I may bracket you with me, I think I'll give you about 15 years, but it's us old fellas are in the habit of thinking that things were always better in the past. The golden age kind of fallacy, if you like, that you know, it's everything gets worse the more it goes on. Every change is for the worse. Now, I spent 40 plus years marking student work. I know others have done their time at the chalk faces, it used to be called, marking stuff. And for the first 5 to 10 years, I'd say, I thought, God, these students are worse. It gets every year they get worse and worse. And then I thought, actually, they don't get any worse. They're sometimes not very good, but then they're only 19, or in early days, some of them were only 17 coming into college. And I thought, they haven't had any time to learn writing. They're still apprentice writers. It's a craft. And like anything else, they've been good at it. It's hard work. I nearly used an intensive that wouldn't do. And yeah, people say that they get things that get worse. And they always talk about, you know, standards are slipping. Well, what are standards? There's a lovely story of a headmaster being interviewed on television, I suppose. And he said, but aren't your standards a little old-fashioned, headmaster? And he drew himself up to his full height and said, yes, that's what makes them standards. And there's something in that, not quite as much as perhaps he thought. Yes, language changes all the time, Donny. That's the thing. It's never the same. It shifts from time to time. You and I use words that we wouldn't have used in our youth. I'll probably do the opposite too, but that's a different matter. But language has changed. New words come into being, not just technical words, but new influences come in from everywhere, mostly from TV and film, I suppose. But language changes. And the word here is prescriptive. We shouldn't be prescriptive. We should recognise change is a normal part of language. At the same time, we do need to insist that there is some sort of standard, if we want to call it that, not a popular word, I suspect. There is some sort of standard. Otherwise, higher levels of communication become impossible. If we don't agree what the words mean and we can't write the words in the right order, then we fail at communication. And that's where about, you remember Alice in Wonderland, Humpty Dumpty says, when I use a word, it means what I want it to mean. Well, Humpty Dumpty is on his own there. That just can't happen. We have to try and make words, use them accurately.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things there, Alan, that I'd like you to expand on. Number one, and it does my head in, which I know is not proper English either, but, or should I say, even correct English, if you wanted to speak like that, is people who cannot differentiate between the same sounding word.
Oh, homophones, yeah.
But has two different meanings and two different spellings. And I'm thinking particularly of there and there, as in it's over there.
Yeah.
Or there, belong to me, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. There's a T-shirt out there, Donnie, which is how to upset a pedant, or how to comfort a pedant and say, there.
Yeah.
All three different. Homophones don't work terribly well on the radio, do they? but, yeah, I know. It is an issue. And your is another one. You do get it.
That's correct. The two different, the one with the asterisks are the apostrophe. And another one, actually, while we're on that now, and I have them written down here in front of me while you were chatting, is W-E-R-E and W-E apostrophe R-E.
Yeah.
And people can't differentiate or just don't. And I think, and I'm not take you to task or have a row with you, but you alluded to the fact there that, well, you're only dealing with 17 to 19 or maybe 20-year-olds and they don't really have a proper grasp and they're only learning. I would suggest that when it comes to that, that their learning curve should be completed because they should have learned it in the two former schools they were in, the proper use of the English language. I am old enough to remember an aspect of English when we were doing it in school called comprehension.
Yes, indeed. I remember comprehension. I loved it. Funnily enough, I was good at it. I wasn't good at many things, but I was good at that. Yeah, comprehension, where you had to read a passage. It was featured in the exams, I think, if memory serves.
It most certainly was in the inter cert and the leaving cert, as it was, which of course they renamed the junior cert. Comprehension was a big part of it. And for those of you who don't remember what Alan and myself are talking about, which could be quite a lot of you, but it was basically maybe a passage, could be 2-3 paragraphs. You had to read that, understand it, and explain what it meant. That's basically
the answer to some questions. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and the questions, of course, were designed to see did you understand it. But, I mean, basically what you had to do was regurgitated in a different form of English or in a different, using different words to show that you actually understood what the passage was about. And that is the basic.
It's quite a sophisticated skill, actually, to be able to rephrase something in a slightly different way. It's quite a good skill. Do you remember, did you ever have to do parsing? Nobody does parsing anymore. It's where you had to... Oh, I hated it because you had to draw boxes around things and I was hopeless at drawing boxes. You had to separate the various words in a sentence and describe their functions in the sentence, what they were doing in relation to the other words. It was a fairly abstruse kind of practice. Now, it wasn't too difficult because at the time I was studying Latin and you had to do that all the time in Latin, which is why Latin is very useful for study of English. But I'm afraid to say, and this is really going to sound like an outlet, that grammar seems to be much less taught, or shall we put it, much less learnt. Teaching and learning are two different things, as I ought to know. They're not very well learnt in schools. And I know in the 60s there was a move to stop teaching people grammar. Grammar was stifling creativity and all of those 1960s kind of things. And perhaps some of that was true, but you can't neglect grammar altogether. And I know I take delight in occasionally coming across a student whose first language is not English. So they're working in a second language the whole time, and even better, they're students who are doing master's degrees in teaching English. Now, I know that I can have a conversation with them about some odd points of English grammar, and they will understand what I'm talking about. And I couldn't have that conversation with a native speaker, you know, somebody who isn't working in a second language, because they will never have learned that grammar.
Well, again, Alan, I'm old enough to remember English teachers when you would be doing your, say, for argument, I think the phrase was in-house exams.
Yeah.
Or your tests on a Friday, if you remember those, if you came up in the same system, you kind of got tested on everything, your maths, English, Irish on a Friday. But you would be... Now, it was explained to me many, many, many years ago by a teacher who corrected my misinterpretation of how the correcting system works. I was always under the misapprehension that you started at zero and you got points for everything that you got right. And I remember the teacher saying, no, actually, that's not the way it works. You start at 100% and points get deducted for what you do wrong. And I am old enough to remember if there wasn't an I, the I wasn't dotted correctly, if the apostrophe wasn't in the correct place, if the full stop wasn't there, and if commas weren't where they should have been in a sentence, you got docked marks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. That's very prescriptive, isn't it? I mean, that's what I mean. What they're saying to you is that's the only way of doing it. And and there's a confusion there, I think, in that we use language for a whole range of different purposes, for communicating to different people. It's very different. If I was chatting to you, imagine, for example, as in before times, we were sitting in a pub chatting away. We might use slightly more relaxed and informal language than we would use if we were going for a job interview or we were speaking to a politician, for example, and you know, where we're trying to impress and to formulate quite complicated ideas, perhaps. So that's assuming you and I are going to be talking rubbish when we eventually get to meet, which is quite possible. That's true of students too and young persons, because it's well known that children use a different language in the playground or in the street, if they still play in the street, than they do at home or in the classroom. They have a different set of language that they use. They use different language again when they're talking to their friends on the phone and texting again, which you mentioned at the top. Texting is a different form again, not so very different. And then there's the formal speaking and writing. It's always there's slight chaos when you get the wrong form used or there's a mismatch. And I'm old enough and I suppose stuffy enough to not really like being addressed in an email by a student as, hey, Alan. I don't mind the Alan bit. That's perfectly all right. And that's how I would introduce myself to students. I thought was a little informal. And I once had a business letter. I think an insurance company, and it was addressed as Hi Alan. That was the salutation on it, and I thought that was marvellously inappropriate. They don't do it anymore. I'm nearly sorry I complained. But anyway, do you want to talk about texting for a bit? Because I know I've got a lovely quote.
Sorry, Alan, texting. just before you go to texting, yeah. Because we'll be talking about that for a fair, because there's a lot involved in that one. But another thing which I think, and I'd like your opinion on this, which has helped to dilute our comprehension of the English language and our ability to read it properly, is cut and paste. And people just cut and paste into a document and they forget that there might be an adjective required or there might be something else required. And when you read it, it makes absolutely no sense. And then you sit down and you reword it so that it does make sense.
Yeah, well, that's because it doesn't fit with the rest of the sentence in that place. Yeah, and it's very easy to do. I mean, I've probably done it myself. And I like to think that I've probably been aware of when you're reading through, you say, oh, hang on, I got that wrong. When I cut and pasted, I didn't get it right. Yeah, well, like any skill, Donnie, if you're lazy, you're not going to do a good job. Same applies to every set of skills you can imagine. If you don't think about your work and you haven't thought about it, you're going to make that kind of mistake. And cut and pasting is lazy. I might say for students, cut and pasting, unless they're cut and pasting their own work, is plagiarism, for which there are terrible punishments. they're frightened to death with plagiarism. But anyway, wholesale cut and pasting is very naughty. But yeah, it is a difficult thing to do. It's dangerous to do that. So you have to be prepared to proofread your work in longer work. And I've had two students in the last few months actually said, oh, I didn't proofread that essay. And I look at them. We're on the screens, of course, nowadays. I look at them and say, are you mad? You simply can't not proofread. You just must. If you don't finish the essay, you'd nearly be better to leave it and proofread it. You can't have a kind of syllabus. The sort of mistakes you started with, you know, the theirs and the theirs. And a particular one of mine that I noticed is the confusion of been with being. Have you come across that one?
Yes, indeed.
E-E-N
as opposed to E-I-N-G.
Yeah, that's correct, yes. That's exact. But I think that's a product, and it's a slightly different thing in one way. It's a product of patterns of speech. People from the counties a little north of Dublin tend to pronounce the two words the same. And they're therefore not entirely certain, or perhaps they are wholly certain, but just wrong, when they come to write been, B-E-E-N, down in an essay or something. And they don't hear the difference, so they don't see the difference. And this is what I call, I do occasional talks and on writing, and I say, this is, try and trap non-standard usages. That's a non-standard usage. Now, the language has changed from saying, that's wrong, from the days when you would have got a disapproving look, if not the edge of the ruler, and say, no, that's just wrong. You say, it's now non-standard. That's what you would possibly what you would say, because that's your regional manner of pronunciation. Fine, that's fair enough. But it's not appropriate in this document, which is aimed at this audience. So you have to think. Another thing I tell students all the time, think about your reader. Who is supposed to be reading this? If it's one of your mates, then perhaps being is all right for being. But if it's because they will understand it and they will perhaps see it as a joke, as ironic. But so you've got to be a little bit careful and get the ear. But at the same time, we have to recognise that people's speech patterns are different. Just look within this island. We don't even need to go to the neighbouring one. Different speech patterns that there are in what we might call native English speakers all over this island, some of them probably mutually unintelligible. I'm not sure quite how a Cork man manages with a Ballymena man, for example. Or not quite sure.
Just stop. We're still, we don't need to go that far. We're still struggling with the lads from Kerry. Tell me.
That's a different matter, I think.
Tell me this much, Alan. And it's something, again, which comes to mind, and this is why I love talking to you, because when you're chatting, different things come into my mind. How much of it is down to the fact that we don't write letters anymore? Like, I can remember my mother, Lord have mercy on her soul, writing to her sisters in America and in England and et cetera, et cetera. That just doesn't happen anymore.
People write, but they write emails. Well, there's much more Skyping and Zooming and whatever you're having yourself. In electronic media, I suppose, visual media, and that I think is an important difference. But people probably write, I think on the whole, people probably write more than they ever used to, because a lot of, particularly young people, I think, are texting all day long, it seems to me. You know, I've seen young nephews of mine, for example, you'd be sitting watching a football match, or they'd be watching a football match, I'd be sitting, or a TV, something on TV, and the whole time they'd be texting. They're either sharing that experience with their friends or they're having another experience at the same time. So I think the writing, the lack of writing is only part of it. But the thing about writing a letter, and I think it ought to come back, it's such a lovely thing to do. You sit down and write a letter by hand, and the slowness of it is actually very attractive. I'm writing more and more these days, partly because I'm spending an awful lot of time in meetings, and I tend to take notes in meetings. It's something to do when meetings are fairly boring, quite frankly. But I take notes, and I enjoy the physical nature of writing, pen on the page, and we should write more. But I think people do a lot of writing, and certainly text speech. Our friend David, I don't know if you've come across David Chriscliffe. If you want books on language, he writes lovely little easy books on language and all sorts of it. But he said he had a quotation first. John Humphreys, who was worked for the BBC and was a famous old crank, but he wrote the Daily Mail, the paper for cranks. How texting is wrecking our language. Texters are vandals who are doing to our language what Genghis Khan did to his neighbours 800 years ago. They are destroying it, pillaging our punctuation, savaging our sentences, raping our vocabulary, and they must be stopped. You can hear him banging the table. The Daily Mail readers, I'd say, love that.
And that brings us... The only thing I would say before we leave that and go on to texting, because we only have 3 minutes left, Alan. I know where the time goes is beyond me. But I would contend that we're typing a lot more, but we're not writing a lot more.
That's true. That, I think, is true, yeah. And that's one of the things that's hard for students, because all of a sudden, well, they've been writing at school, I guess, or practically all day, every day. But now they're writing and they're taking notes all day. Nobody teaches them to take notes either. And then they're having to write. Now, they write their essays on machines nowadays. They don't write by hand. It wouldn't be accepted nowadays, which is something of a shame in some cases. But then they get to an exam, or they used to wait before they became online, and then they were required to write an exam longhand, something which they never do. They never sit and write for 3 hours. And it's an exhausting process, I can tell you, because I did it a few years ago.
It is, especially if your brain and your hand are going at two different speeds, which is something that was always kind of an issue with me. The brain would be going a lot faster than the hand, and you would have to proofread it. Alan, it's an amazing thing that we're chatting here, and I just had a text message from a listener. And she says, a big hello. I still write letters.
Good woman. Sorry, didn't say it was a woman, I think, but yeah, yes, excellent person.
she is a woman. But Alan, I mean, to go back to texting, again, you know, and it's something I said at the very top almost a half an hour ago, there is a thing called text speak, and it's becoming part of our daily lexicon. And, you know, to me, there's a place for everything and everything in its place. And some of what you see coming up on emails, for argument's sake, you mentioned them, it's straight off a text screen, and it should not, maybe it's me being an old curmudgeon, but it shouldn't be allowed in an email scenario. I mean, it just isn't. To me, I would construct an email very similar to how I was taught to construct a letter in school, and I presume that's a thing of the past as well now.
Well, it is, of course. It's nice to know how to do it. Yeah, the email is a very interesting medium, Donnie, because it's somewhere in between. You've almost said so yourself. Texting is one thing. It's very short. You've got 120 or 140 characters, and young people particularly are very good at creative abbreviation, and it has its own rules. So it's rule-based. They're just different rules. When it carries over into a different medium, then it sometimes can look odd. And have you ever heard anybody actually say lol, which doesn't mean lots of love, as David Cameron thought it did. It means laughing out loud, I'm told. But I've actually heard somebody say it, a young person actually, say it out loud, and the other young persons in the group fell about and said, you actually said lol. In other words, they were acutely aware that this is something that you can type into a text message, but it's very inappropriate or jokey, and it was quite jokey, to use it as a spoken language, and even worse if you write it in a more formal letter. So context is all. And there's, I have to say, to spoil your curmudgeonliness and mine, there's absolutely no evidence that texting damages language skills. So very sad for us, isn't it?
Well, on that note, Alan, we will say goodbye for today. We're gone over time, and my next trip now in a few minutes will be to the Irish Cultural Centre in Hammersmith in London very shortly.
Good Lord, well, good luck with that. Enjoy.
Yes, I will be perfecting the art of bilocation. Now, next Monday, being a bank holiday, Alan, by my calculation, will be back chatting to me on the 19th, which would be the following, if you know what I mean.
Oh, very good. Yes. Right. And I'll mention that. Yeah.
I have no doubt it will be, as always, riveting. Former academic Alan Tuffrey. Alan, as always, an absolute pleasure. Thanks a million.
Take care, Donnie. Bye-bye.
This is Near FM.
90.3.